Hello, everybody. Okay, I'm talking in the main shul. I think you can see the roof up there. And we're going to start this year's topic. I've chosen Shmuel Bet. Shmuel Bet lends itself to a lot of very interesting and fascinating parshanut, intrigue, has some of our favorite biblical characters in it, and there's something for everybody. So first, it's important to know that the construct of what we call Shmuel Bet is not a Jewish division. There's one Sefer Shmuel in the Talmud and in the Midrashim. The division of Shmuel, Malachim, and Divrei Hayamim into two parts was divided by Christians. It's similar to the division of the Bible into chapter numbers. Right, that Yeshayahu has 66 chapters, that Yechezkel has 48 chapters. Those are divisions made in the early Middle Ages by Christians. Jewish divisions have what's called parshiot. It's for another time, but in the Torah, it lends itself very easily divisible. And if you have a Koren Tanakh usually gives you the parsha numbers as well as the Perek numbers. Okay, but be it as it may, the book of Shmuel does divide itself very conveniently between Shmuel Aleph, which is the starts with the rule of Eli and moves to the rule of Shmuel and then moves to the rule of Shaul. And Shmuel Bet begins with the rule of David. Okay, Shaul dies at the very end of Shmuel Aleph. And that's where we begin. Okay, so I want to, everyone should have a text of Shmuel Bet, chapter 1. I have some here for you. Shmuel Bet, chapter 1. We're going to do some of the psukim, but it's crucial to have a little bit of background. And I'm going to concentrate in the first few prakim on some of the political messages, the political ramifications of the beginning of the Sefer, because whenever you have a movement from one kingdom to another, there will obviously be some political machinations going on in such a nation, right? It's an amazing element of our country that at least usually power is moves relatively gracefully and peacefully from one president to another and one party to another, but it's not always that way in kingdoms. So when Shaul dies, it's not so obvious that the next king should be David singularly. And in fact, Shaul's son was crowned king by a Benjaminite power broker. That power broker was Avner, and the son was Ishbosheth. Right, so I take you to a Tosfos in the Seches Sanhedrin that asks the question: how could someone as politically savvy as Avner, and someone who has ostensibly good intentions, someone that Chazal treat very well, Chazal love Avner, how could someone with Avner's sense of gravity and history make such a stupid move as to appoint Ishbosheth king? He was so not worthy for kingship. How could he appoint Ishbosheth king when everybody in Israel knows that David is primed to be king? So for one thing, it could be that's politics. You know, Avner was Ishbosheth's cousin, and I'd rather have someone close to me as king. If I have access to a particular person as mayor, governor, or president, I may prefer that person to continue being mayor or senator or congressman, so I have that access, even if I possibly believe that he's not the best person for the job. Avner just feels this is my cousin, and I want my cousin to be king. I don't even if I think David would be a better king. But we often think better of Avner than to consider that condition. Or he may have just been loyal to his uncle Shaul. Says my uncle died a violent death at the hands of the Philistines, and I think it would serve my uncle to appoint his son king. Tosfos, however, comes with a third provision for why Avner maintained the kingdom with Binyamin, is because of an oracle. Perhaps you're familiar with this oracle. Rashi makes reference to it in his commentary to the Torah. Is that just before Binyamin was born, and Yaakov was traveling after the debacle at Shechem, God told him that I will make kings descend from you. It's the end of the sixth aliyah in Parshas Vayishlach. Umelochim mechalotzecha yetzeu. Kings shall yet depart from you. And Binyamin was just born after that. So that's the oracle according to Tosfos. It's a Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah that two kings, would yet depart from Yaakov's lines. It couldn't be referring to the kingship of David because that son was already born. You can't say from your loins will come for someone that's already born. So the Medrash understands it to refer to two kings that should come from Shevet Binyamin. And when Shaul died, in order to fulfill this oracle, there had to be another king. So Avner was meant to fulfill this oracle by appointing a second king. Okay, but be that as it may, David is certainly crowned king over his own tribe, Yehuda, right away. Now, where was David the last number of months? It looks like in Tanakh up to a year. Where was David the year before Shaul was killed? He was living amongst the Philistines. Remember, it wasn't safe for David anywhere in the last 10 or so chapters in Shmuel Aleph. Right? Once Shaul got it in his head that David expected to be the next king, of course, David kept denying it, but the reader knows that David expects to be the next king. Right? David never plays in any assurances. He's very humble about being married to the king's daughter, and he's very humble about the king's son being his best friend. He never like pokes out an arrogant statement such as "Make my day. I'm going to be the next king because God promised." No, you can't just forget about your strategy of survival, you know, and David, because Shaul is trying to kill him. He has a strategy to survive. So during that time in Shmuel Aleph, David received some help from Kohanim, and then for that, Shaul killed off the whole town, killed off 85 families. So David knows it's not safe for me to get any help from anybody, because I would be putting them in terrible, significant danger, right? So then he felt that even his family was in danger, because what Shaul will do is Shaul will capture some of David's siblings and say, "I'm going to kill them one by one until you give yourself up." Right? You hear it? So David sends his entire family to Moab to live there. That's not Medrash. That's in Shmuel Aleph. Why Moab? Yeah, because of Ruth, because that's his background. All right, so if there's a foreign nation that might take in some of my family, let it be my own background. According to a medrash that Rashi brings down, all of those siblings and his parents were killed by the Moabites, except for one sibling. According to one medrash, a brother. According to another medrash, a sister. The brother's name was Shammah. The sister's name was Avigail. David had a wife named Avigail too, by the way. Okay, so one of the sisters that was killed was Yoav's mother, Tsruya. Yoav ben Tsruya. Tsruya was David's sister. Okay, so that is David had some serious tzaros in Shmuel Aleph because of Shaul. Right? How do we know that the Moabites killed off his whole family? Because when he brought them to Moab, this is in the text, he said, "I will call for you when it's safe." And it certainly was safe in Shmuel Bet when David was king. It was safe for him to call for them. And there's no story in Shmuel Bet where he calls for his family. Now, that may have happened. Not everything in the world that ever happened has to be written in the Bible. But the rabbis took that silence as a sign that there was no one to call back because they had been killed. When Rashi in Shmuel Bet Perek Chet, which we will see some months from now, in chapter 8 of our studies in Shmuel Bet, Rashi points out that David is profoundly cruel to the Moabites in a particular battle. Take a look in chapter 8 of Shmuel Bet. And Rashi says, how can account for David's profound cruelty? And that's where Rashi says that because to avenge the all of his siblings and his parents. Okay. All right. So it was not safe for David to be in any Israelite city. Moab was the logical place outside of Israel to take his family, and that didn't work. What's the only last place is to rely on a very famous political theory that the enemy of my enemy ought to be my friend. Right? So not that David's thinking that, but that he's thinking that maybe the Philistines will think that, because Shaul is called a marshia to the Plishtim. He caused mischief, or he did evil to the Philistines, whatever it may be. So David feels, if I can convince the Plishtim that not only does Shaul hate me, everybody knows that, and is trying to kill me, but I hate him, and I want to get vengeance on him. So if David can somehow convince the Plishtim that he is actually against Shaul and getting even with Shaul, then maybe the Plishtim will allow him to stay there. Now remember, David also fought against the Philistines. He's the one who killed Goliath. Well, according to Chazal, was the brother of the Philistine king. The king's name was Achish, he was a giant, and his brother was Goliath, according to Gemara and Sanhedrin. So when David at first goes to Philistia to try the waters there, he realizes it's not safe. They said, isn't this the one that the dancing girls say that Shaul kills in the thousands and David in the 10,000s? So David had to feign insanity so that they would say, oh, do we have enough meshuggahs here? That must not be David. That wouldn't be David. So they let him go. Otherwise, he feared they would kill him. And there's a tehillim we say on Shabbos morning. Does that sound familiar, everybody? Le David b'shano v'soos ta'amo lifnei Abimelech v'yigor shehu v'yelach. Chapter 34. We say it in Shabbos morning in Pesukei Dezimra. Sound familiar, everybody? It's an alphabetical chapter of Tehillim. Mm-hmm. Sure. So it says, LeDavid b'shano soes tamo. He had to make himself appear to be insane in order to escape the Philistines. So it's not safe in any Israelite city, because if David asks help from any Israelites, he's putting them in danger. It's not safe in Moab. They killed his whole family. It's not safe in Philistia. Where do you go? He hides in caves near Beit Shemesh and Adullam. He's hiding. There's no safe place for David. He, at the end of Shmuel Aleph, he tries once again to go to Philistia, and this time they take him in. By this time, Shaul has been chasing after David for so long that the Philistines are saying, you know, maybe we can gain something by this guy being with us. He has so besmirched his reputation with the Israelite king that maybe we can use him. So David was conquering neighboring areas and bringing tribute to the king of Philistia, saying that this tribute came from the Israelites. Mm. So every time Achish gets more tribute, he's saying, oh, those Israelites must really hate David. And then remember what I said before, confer, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Shaul is my enemy. David is Shaul's enemy, so David ought to be my friend, right? Only at the very end, thank God, because the Philistines were about to test David to be the one to actually kill Shaul. You know, David is basically undercover, right? When an undercover police officer tries to infiltrate a drug gang, right, and someone within the gang thinks he's a police officer, they would kill him, right? And sometimes they put him to the test. They capture a police officer, or maybe an innocent civilian, and say, kill that person to prove that you're not a police officer. You know, they'll put him to the test. So they're about to put David to the test, when thank God, Kadosh Baruch Hu must have set it up this way, is that the Philistines themselves said, you know, we've had it. We don't want to have this Israelite with us any longer. And Achish told David, you know, you've been such a loyal servant with all this tribute, and I know that Shaul hates you, but my colleagues, there were five Philistine kings, one for each Philistine city, right? So there's Ekron, Gat, Aza, Ashdod, Ashkelon. So the other four kings, they were called Sarnei Plishtim, the other four kings expressed their indignation at David being so close with Achish, who was the chief Philistine king. So Achish banished him and he went back to Israel. It was right in the next battle at Har HaGilboa that Shaul was killed with his three sons. Now, to the average editorial in the newspaper the next day after Shaul was killed, to the average Israelite, you know, sizing up the situation, David had been in Philistia for a year, and then the Philistines somehow figure out where Shaul is hiding. It might have looked to the average Israelite that David colluded with the Philistines to have Shaul king so that he can now rule. It is crucial. I'm not saying that that's true. I'm saying that it's very possible that Israelites felt that way. And there would be good reason for them to feel that way. David had been considered a loyal servant of the Philistine king for quite some time. There was nothing else he could do. Right? Again, there's no safe city in Israel. There is a story in between where he goes to a man's house up way up north, Naval HaKarmeli, and begs him for some food, right? And he refuses him, right? And his wife comes to save him. So what was David thinking there? Aren't you putting Naval's men in danger by asking them for food? It could be, this is some Mephoroshim say, it could be that by that time, Shaul was just so distracted with the Philistines that he wouldn't be able to do anything to Naval. And that Naval should have known that. Okay, all right. But in any event, David ended up marrying Abigail shortly after that. Okay, so what can David do in order to dispel the thought, God forbid, to dispel the idea that I was responsible for the death of Shaul? Now, there are three events towards the beginning of Shmuel Bet that unconditionally paved the way for David to be the king of all of Israel in chapter 5 of Shmuel Bet. Those three events are the death of Shaul and his three sons, the death of Avner, and the death of Ishbosheth, the king that Avner crowned. Okay, those three events should be, lahavdil, if you will, when David hears the news, he should say Shechianu, all three of them. Right? Remember that the Gemara in Bracha says that Chas v'Shalom, when a person finds out that a parent just died and now he's about to inherit their fortune, right? He says two brachas, Brach Dynamis and Shechianu. The question in the Mephoroshim, he should wait till after he's no longer an onan to say the Shechianu. But but David should say Shechianu when he finds out that Shaul's dead. I'm about to be king. He should say Shechianu when he finds out Avner is dead. He's, you know, my way is paved, because right after Avner is killed, Ishbosheth doesn't have a prayer. Ishbosheth is killed in the very next chapter, right? So that is, in each case, David goes out of his way to tell all Klal Yisrael. And even in these stories, it says in the text, and everybody in Israel knew that David wasn't behind the death of Avner right? Okay. So that is something that David has to clarify. And let's now look in Shmuel Bet Perek Aleph for this example again. I'm going to pass him Tanakh. Okay. So let's turn Shmuel Bet. Okay. Let's turn to Perek Aleph. Vayi acharei mot Shaul. Now that is that's just an objective description. Shaul is dead. But it already said back in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Lamed Aleph, that Shaul was hiding from the Philistines, right? Just look back one chapter. it says that the plishtim vayad beku, plishtim es Shaul v'esbanav, vayad beku, devek means glue. Here it means they attached themselves to them. In other words, they're cornering them. They're coming very closer and closer to capturing them. And one thing, we know this from Philistine sources, and we know this from a few stories in Tanakh, you don't want to be captured by Philistines. Certainly not if you are a person very high up in the government. Right? When they captured Shimshon, they tortured him in their arena. They would take their captives and make sport of them for weeks and weeks on end until they would just rip them apart piece by piece slowly. So you don't want to be, and plus it's not just that you're afraid you won't be able to penny salalubi plishtim because they may torture me. No, it would be a terrible chilul Hashem for the king of Israel to be torn apart this way. Right? Okay. So when Shaul realizes that the plishtim are on him, right? So it says, Vayimtsa'uhu hamorim, chapter 31, verse 3. It says that the morim are the archers found him bakoshes. Koshes means they found him with their bows. Now, what does that mean? They found him with their bows. It means that a stray arrow found him and actually went through a window because he's hiding inside someplace. It means that it found him or that they became aware of his hiding place. Not quite clear. It says, Vayochel ma'od mehamorim. He was extremely frightened by the morim. Another piece of insider information, please. The day before, the Bible says that the day before these events, he went to a necromancer to ask advice of what would happen because God didn't answer him in dreams. He wasn't in a state to receive a message because he was in such a melancholy state. There were no prophets. Shmuel had died. There's no Urim v'Tumim. Why not?
He killed all the
Kohanim, right?
Killed all the Kohanim, right?
The Gemara says that, you know, when he repeats that, he doesn't mention that because he was ashamed. So there's no way for him to receive any kind of oracle to determine what's going to happen with these Philistines. And so he asks a necromancer, which is a death penalty violation. And let's skip the discussion right this minute for whether she really did call Shmuel back from the dead. Even if you want to say no human being can do that, maybe God did it for her, and that's why she was so amazed when it happened. I never did this before. Who's this? So, okay. Be that as it may, one can agree that Shaul thought that Shmuel was talking to him. Would you agree with that? Okay,
yes.
Shaul thought that it was actually Shmuel talking to him, whether it was God doing it, whether it was someone under the table, however you want to say, whether she hypnotized him, like the Ralbag says, into thinking that it was Shmuel talking to him. But he really thought that Shmuel was telling him what would happen. And one of the things Shmuel told him was, tomorrow you will die. Death is not only imminent, death is certain. Okay. There's a lot of halachic literature about suicide, someone killing themselves in the throes of torture, or, you know, remember the story with Hanina ben Trajon, who refused to allow his students to rush the fires. He didn't want to die 1 second earlier than Hashem meant for him to die. But here, the Medrash, at least in the way the most Rishonim understand it, with the exception of Sadugon says that Shaul was an illicit, prohibited suicide. If you want to see, this week's parsha has the discussion of it. It's a big da'as kein mibali atosfis in the pasuk shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam damo yishofech in chapter 9, the beginning of chapter 9. You can't miss it. You open up in Mikros Gedolos to chapter 9, verse 5, and you'll see the big, big da'as kein mibali atosfis, which is the rabbis writing in France and Germany during the Crusades. And there's some very chilling stories about these things, and he brings in some ideas from Shaul. And if you got my last book, not the one that's coming in this week, by the way, the last book on the biblical sinning. So there's a chapter on that. How could Shaul commit suicide? All right. So here, Shaul really thought he was going to die, right? So it says here that he told his armor bearer to kill me. You know, it's a lot easier to ask someone else to just slay me in a way which will totally do the job. One can imagine Shaul, as it says, Mishich Mavamali, he's probably a strong guy, right? Even in his older age, probably a big, tall guy. And he asked his armor bearer to slay him, and the armor bearer couldn't do it. So Shaul fell on his own. Take a look. He's worried that they'll torture me. So when the armor bearer couldn't do it, it says, Veikach Shaul is hacherev. Right, that's Pasuk Hey, Pasuk Dalet. Vayikach Shaul es hacherev vayipol aleha. He took a sword and fell on it. It's not necessarily going to kill yourself. Right? Well, how did he do that? He took a sword, a big sword, and he just fell on it. And did it go through him? But it didn't. But it says, vayipol aleha. It doesn't say that he died. It just says he fell on it. What happened? Now, how can you understand that? When his armor bearer saw that Shaul died, does that necessarily mean he actually died? Or is it possible that the Bible is telling us that from the standpoint of the person in the Pasuk? The armor bearer thought he died. You get it?
Yes.
Like when Yosef's brothers look from far and they say, and they saw a caravan of Yishmaelim coming. They weren't Yishmaelim. They were Midianim. But they thought they were Yishmaelim, so that's what they said. Okay, it says Midianim took him out of the pit. Okay? All right, but that's one of the Mefarshim that says that. But sometimes the Bible tells us something from the standpoint of the people in the Pasuk. Shaul was not dead. But the armor bearer thought, Vayarki Meis, Shaul Vayipol Gamhu Al Charbo Vayomos Imo. He also fell on his sword. Now here it says he fell on his sword and died. But when Shaul fell on his sword, it just says he fell on his sword. Now it says, Vayomas Shaul Shloshes Banov Nosei Kelav, and Shaul died and his three sons died. Okay, and that's the end of the story. As far as we're concerned. Now in Shmuel Bet, we're told that we did not get the whole story here. Okay, now I want you to be a good lawyer and a good prosecutor. Okay, and we're going to have to use information that we might have to take from other places. It says, "Vayhi acharei mot Shaul b'David shav me'akoses ha'amalek, v'yeshev David b'tziklag yamim shnayim." Now, it's instance that the pasuk mentions it after David was banished by the Philistines. It says that all the people from Tziklag, where they were staying, were captured by the Amalekim. But interestingly, the Amalekim did not kill the women and children. They wanted to use them as hostages. When David got wind of this, he and all of his men came and wiped out the Amalekim. And it says, and they took the spoils. Wait a second. I thought you're not supposed to take spoils from Amalek. Isn't that what they did in Shaul? Why was David allowed to take the spoils from Amalek? Anyone want to think? What would you think?
Spoils that they took from Israel?
Yeah, those were the spoils they took from us. They weren't kone them. They didn't acquire them. It was our stuff that they took from us. Okay, fine. So when David came back from this war against Amalek, on the third day, a man came from the camp where Shaul was, that's in up north in the Gilboa Mountains. And his garments were torn, by Adama al Rosho. Now, the fact that there's dust all over his forehead can mean that he's genuinely mourning, or he wants to make it look like he's mourning. Okay, I'll let you decide. Vayibavo el David vayipol arza v'yishtachu. He came to David and he bowed on his face to the floor. He understood that David is a man of importance. Vayomalo David, Amize Tavo, said, "Where are you coming from?" Vayomare Lov, Mimachane Yisrael Nimlatati. I came from the camp of Israel. V'yomer elav David, mehaya hadavar hagedna li. What happened there? Tell me. V'yomer asher nosa am min hamilchama v'gam harbei nafal min ha'am. Everyone is running away. Many people fell. V'yamusu, and they died. V'gam Shaul v'yonason b'no mesi. Shaul died, and Yonasan, his son, died. This is now. Remember what I said before about Shechianu and Baruch Dynamis? This is bad news because it's the king of Israel and it's David's best friend. Remember, David loves Yonatan. It's good news as far as David becoming king, but Vayomer David al Hanar Hamagidlo, Ech Yodata, he makes Shaul Vihonosin Bino. How do you know that he died? Right? How do you know when someone says that this woman's husband died? The first answer question that is going to be asked is, what did you do? How do you know? Let's hear further. Did you hear it from secondhand? Right? So he's about to say, I heard it very much firsthand. Vayomer Nahar Magidlo, Nikroni Kresi Bahara Gilboa Behine Shaul Nishon Alchani So Behine Arecha Vubale Parashimid Bikuhu. I just happened to be at Har HaGilboa. Really? With when you have dust on your forehead? Were you a combatant? What were you doing there? And look who I saw. I saw Shaul leaning on his spear. Any thoughts about that? Remember his spear? What did it say back in chapter 31?
Sword.
Fell on a sword. Right? Can you confuse a sword for a spear? Maybe, but I don't know. What would do a better job of killing yourself, a sword or a spear? But I don't know. But it definitely is a divergence. You know, here it says sword. Now he's saying he fell on his spear. A cherev is not a chanis. Okay? And the same word here he uses that the Philistines were pressing on. They were about to find him. And you know as well as I, David, that you don't want to be a king of Israel captured by the Philistine. They would rip him apart limb from limb. Look, we all know what they did to him, capturing him dead. Right? They stripped his body. They beheaded him and his three sons and hanged their headless, naked bodies in the town square. Okay? That's what the Philistines do with their captives. Just imagine what they would have done with them if they caught them live. Okay? The people of Yavesh Gilad, remember Yavesh Gilad was that city that Shaul saved their right eyes. Remember that from Bnei Amon? Remember that story in Shmuel Aleph? The Ammonites said, if you don't remove your right eye, right? Yavesh Gilad was also the city where the 300 men from Binyamin got the women. 400 men got the women who were dancing at the end of Sefer Shoftim. Remember that? So Yavesh Gilad has a big past with Shaul. So these were the courageous men who came there to take his body down from the town square in Beit She'an, which is pretty high up from Givat Shaul, where they were buried. Right? Beit She'an is way up north. Okay, so David asks the Nar, how do you know this? And he says that he was leaning on a spear, and the Philistines were about to capture him. And he saw me. He called out to me. I didn't know it was him. I'm only saying in retrospect that I knew it was who it was. Right? Now, how do you know he's telling the truth? Because he actually has something on him. He has something in his hands that has incontrovertible proof that he did see Shaul. What are those things?
Crown. The crown.
He has his crown. And he has two bracelets of his. He has, you know, the kings used to wear these big bracelets to hold, you know, keep the hands strong. So Vayifen Acharav, Vayireni, Vayikro Eli, Vayomar Hineni. He called after me. And I said, here I am. Vayomerli, Miata. Now, at no point did David ask him yet, who are you? The boy is telling, he's called a boy, he's called a Na'ar here. He's telling David all this from the standpoint of Shaul. And he said, who are you? Now here is a terrible irony. V'omar elav. Amaleki Anochi. Why are you admitting this to David? David just fought a war against Amalek. And surely you must know you're a nation we don't like too much. Right? All right? He said, I am an Amaleki. And one should include this story as part of a very important debate that rages not only in Chazal, but amongst the Rishonim. Can an Amaleki actually convert and become Jewish? An Amaleki man or woman. So Rashi says in a few places, as does the Rambam, nope, there's only two nations that are not allowed to convert. Two nations where the men are not allowed to convert, and even their women can. Those two nations are Ammon and Moab. Egyptians and Edomites need to wait for three generations, but that's a different story. So here he's saying he's an Amaleki, and he's about to say he's a Ger Amaleki, where he's the son of a converted Amaleki. Right? In other words, when Shmuel told Shaul, I want you to wipe out this nation of Amaleki because of something they did 400 years ago, he tells them these wicked Amalekim. The Rambam says unequivocally, I mean, we have a Torah Shebaal Peh. Rambam says in Hilchos Malachim that whenever we ever had the command to wipe out Amalek, it was always preceded, just like the command when we came into the land of Canaan. It was always preceded with the caveat. If you want to keep 613 mitzvahs, you can live side by side with us as our equals. If you want to keep 7 mitzvahs, you can live side by side with us and we'll come to terms and we'll be good neighbors. Right? But if you want to continue being ra'im b'chata'im, we're not interested in having people from Sodom live in our neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? We're not interested in having such wickedness right in our backyard. Okay, so that's this Amaleki. He says, Amaleki anochi, v'yemer elai, amod na olai umosiseni. Please, he said, stand right before me and kill me. Ki achozani hashavots. Now he is admitting that he is pierced by a spear. Shaul must be in incredible pain. If he fell on a spear, it must have pierced him. Right? His intention was to die without needing this extra help. He got no help from his armor bearer. Right? The word shavots, you see that? Shavots. It's a hapax legomena. The word never appears again in the Bible. Shavuot is usually translated as agony. But I will tell you this, that there is a shoresh in the Torah that resembles this word. And it might mean like it's an agony that just attacks every part of my body. Anybody can guess what's the Torah word that sounds a little like this?
Sure.
It's part of the a design in the Mishkan, Tashbates. Ksonis Tashbates.
Okay,
so the word Shavuot here. So Tashbates, I think the modern word for Tashbates is a crossword puzzle. Right? So the Tashbates means in the you ever see the picture of the Kohen Gadol's the ephod. It has a lot of designs all over it. So like a lattice kind of design. That's called like a tashbates. So a tashbates is something that, you know, shesi v'arev, it just attacks every part of your body. My whole body is in agony. That's why it's called shavots. Okay, be that as it may, ki kol od nafshi bi, I just have a little life left in me, and I would like you to please snuff it out before the Philistines get me. V'amod olav amosesehu. So I stood above him, and I finished him off. And I knew that he wouldn't live after what I saw him. Now, the fact is that Shaul himself knows he's not going to live. Why? Because
the witch
told him the day before that you're not making it. Okay, and he believed it. Okay, that's the Radak's Chiddush of why his suicide is not considered, a sinful act. Okay, All right, so he said that the king begged me to finish him off, right? So what did I do? So I took his crown. He was still wearing his crown. Wow, that's pretty strange. Will the king still be wearing his crown after? Yeah. It could be also that he's lying about the whole thing, and he found the king's crown that was left and saw Shaul already dead. And why is he making up this whole Baba Mainza?
He
wants to get credit from David. He feels that I will get... I mean, look, he has something of great value. A crown is worth, no matter how you slice it. You may have to pawn it someplace, but a crown is certainly worth something. There's probably maybe a jewel or two in it, and it's probably made, it has some gold in it, some silver. So a crown and that bracelet probably has some value. So that in itself, you know, I'm not saying he's as savvy as all of us listening here, but surely, what's the point of giving this over to David if not that he feels that David will give him something more? Some great kavod, some great wealth, some something in a much greater or more recognition or something by giving you this amazingly good news for you, right? You could just disappear into the sunset and probably live off the rest of his life on the value of this crown, right? So instead, he gives it to David, and it's up to the reader with the information at hand. Cherev or Chanit, right? Is it possible that, I mean, how much time did Shaul have after this for this whole conversation to take place? Right? He mentions nothing about an armor bearer being near him dead also, right? There's supposed to be an armor bearer right near him also dead, right? So we can't guess what happened, but we can guess what David thinks about it. Okay? And to determine that, we will not limit ourselves to what appears in here in Perek Aleph. When David hears this news, he says, "Ve'yechazek David bivugadav ve'yikareim ve'gam kol ha'anoshim asher ito." They ripped their clothes, they mourned, they eulogized, they cried, they fasted till the evening for Shaul because he's the king. For Yonasan Beno, by the way, Shaul lost three sons in that battle. Yonasan, because Yonasan was David's dear friend. Ba'alam Hashem, many Jews were killed. Ba'albeis Yisrael kinaflu b'charev. Just mix up, there's a kina on Tisha B'Av that mentions this. V'yema David al Hanar Hamagidlo. Emi ze ata. Tell me now yourself. You told me before what Shaul asked you. Now you tell me. Well, who are you? V'yomer ben ish ger Amaleki anochi. I am the son of an Amaleki convert. Ostensibly, he was married to a Jewish woman. I'm the son of an Amaleki convert. That makes me Jewish, right? It's an irony, right? Shaul was killed by an Amaleki who had pity on him by killing him. Shaul was punished for cruelly leaving the king alive to watch everything I'm doing to your people, and I can get a good king's ransom from you, right? So they all fasted and cried, and then he asked him, "Who are you?" And he said, "I am the son of an Amaleki convert." Primary love, David. How did you not fear to put your hand to the chosen of God? David gash pagabo v'yakeu v'yamos, and they killed him. Primary love, David damcha al roshecha kipicha na b'chale mor anochi mosad. Mosati es Mashiach Hashem. Your blood is on your own hands because you admitted to killing the anointed of God. Amazing. Did David have the right to do this? So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Melachim that David killed him on based on Hora'as Sha'a. You can't kill someone based on their own testimony and their own confession. In other Mesa Matzmo Rasha. Rashi mentions the opinion that he was Doika Adomi. Right? But that's, he says, from the Psikta, he says, and I have serious doubts about that, he Rashi writes. Maybe he killed him because you're an Amaleki, and I paskin like those who say that Amalekim can't convert. And if you're descended from an Amaleki, you're an Amaleki. Okay? But one thing on David's part is that it's crucial for him to want to dispel any rumor that I am happy with this news. See, the Amaleki is expressing to David the very unfortunate message that David does not want to hear, that the average Israelite thinks that I am happy with this, and possibly even worse, I had something to do with this because I was living amongst the Plishtim for some time. Okay? That is not a good situation to start your kingdom. Right? Four of the last six kings of the Israelite dynasty became king by killing the king before him. Right? Okay, there are a lot of assassinations in Israelite kingdom. An assassination per se does not prove that it's a roguish kingdom. But if the assassin himself becomes the next king, that's a roguish kingdom. Mm. Right? A country where a person comes to power by assassinating the previous power, previous head of the government, that's a roguish kingdom who allows such a man to continue being the leader. Right? So if David becomes king by colluding with the Philistines and getting Shaul out of the way, and people think that that's what I did, he needs to dispel that and make sure that it gets in all the papers. And I'm not saying that it's anything but the truth. It is. It's true. Right? But sometimes when you need to dispel, you have to go like, methinks that the king has to protest too much. Right? He really has to show that. I don't want anyone thinking this. Mm-hmm. And my proof that this may be true is that in chapter 4, I'm not going to turn there now, but we'll get there in a few weeks. In chapter 4, when two men from Binyamin, Rechav and Ba'ana, relatives of Shaul, it says, killed Ishbosheth because they realized he was such a terrible king. Mm-hmm. He was not king material and he was not worthy. So they killed him. And what did they do? They brought his head to present to David. Now, when they present the head to David, what does David obviously think they're thinking?
He's happy.
I'm happy with this. And to others, it may look like I ordered the hit. I got two men from Binyamin. I didn't even use people from Yehuda. I used people from Binyamin. The king would be off his guard against his own people, right? So when Rechav and Baana present David with the head, thinking, oh, we're going to get a lot of covered for this, right? Like the Amaleki boy. So I just want to read David's reaction, because David's reaction is one of the 10 Kal V'chomers in Tanakh, right? So it's Perek Dalet Pasuk Tes, very short chapter. Chapter 4, verse 9. Vayan David Esrecha Vezbana Achiv B'nei Rimon HaBeirosi Le'yomar Lahem. Chai Hashem Asher Pados Nafshi Mikol Tzara. They're probably thinking, oh good, he's ready to give us a treasure for this. Right? As the Lord lives, who redeemed me from all my pain. Ki Hamagid Li Le'mor Hinei Meis Sha'ol. V'hu Yakim of Aser Be'enav. When someone came to tell me that Shaul died, and he was just informing me, and I grabbed him and I killed him, just for his pronouncement, How much more so will you see what I will do to people who kill an innocent man while he's sleeping? By the way, this makes him the only person in Tanakh called a tzaddik outside of Noach. In the whole Tanakh, Moshe is never called tzaddik, Yosef is never called tzaddik. It's pasuk al michram ba kesef tzaddik, but the pasuk isn't talking about Yosef. Right? Medrash, the Torah says it's a hint to Yosef in the parsha, but it's Rashi says it's talking about a righteous person in that generation. So ish tzaddik b'beiso al mishkavo, and he killed a righteous man while he's sleeping. But tahalo avakeshes demomi etchem, shall I not get my vengeance upon these people? And he ordered them to be hacked to death. Let nobody in Israel think that I mean to gain from the death of these people. Now, what's my proof that David didn't really think that he killed Shaul? What was the Kal V'chomer?
I say he only reported it. He said he only reported it.
If he really thought that lad actually killed Shaul, now you might still have a Kal V'chomer. You might still have a Kal V'chomer because he was already dying. He didn't kill a quiet, restful Shaul sleeping on his bed, expecting to have a nice, relaxing afternoon the next day, right? He was killing a cowering king who expected to die the next day, who was already bleeding, hemorrhaging, and begging me to kill him, right? So my read of it is that David, we'll see later in Shmuel Bet, that David was very clever about reading through these kind of things. Except in one story where he loses all sense of propriety, where he couldn't even tell that the prophet was talking about him between the rich man and the poor man and the sheep. You know what I'm talking about, right? But here, David is very savvy. He can see through the way the boy is talking that he's not telling the truth. It's too remote. How did he get the crown? How did he get the? I don't know that. But he's not telling me the truth. And the reader can see things that David can't see. The hint might be the sword and the spear, but maybe I'm nitpicking, I don't know. But the David's statement here to these two men and why he's about to kill them, I mean, he just says, if he wanted to express to them a real Kal V'chomer about what you're about to get, right? He could have still hit them with a Kal V'chomer of, you know, someone else also thought that I would be happy with the death of Shaul. And he was sorely wrong, and he didn't do anything as bad as you did. Right? But by David not saying, and he took the life of a king, he didn't say that. He said he was just like bragging to me how happy I must be to, right? So if we read a little between the lines here and see that Rechav and Baana are behaving just the same way that lad is behaving, thinking that David has what to gain from these deaths, and therefore I stand to gain from this death. And David wants to, very much needs to, dispel such a sentiment. Okay, is that clear? All right, so what appears in between is some intrigue between the followers of Shaul, led by Avner, and the followers of David, led by David's nephew, Yoav. Okay? Now, in between that story about some kind of competition, we'll get to that Mitzvah next time, is our chapter. It's Vayikonein David es Hakina Hazos al Shaul val Yonasan Beno. I'm not going to read through that. It shows his incredible love that he had, intense love that he had for Yonatan, right? And look, this is a man who wrote Sefer Tehillim. He's a poet. Circumstance took him to be a warrior. Remember, he was a shepherd and a poet. You know, when all is said and done, his first calling was not to be a warrior, but he had to be transformed, and he did so well. Right? Perhaps the transformation happened when he had to kill Goliath, but he knew how to take advantage of what he needed to in order to change his lifestyle, and he became but the poetry comes through in this incredibly beautiful and tragic poem that he writes in the last 11 psukim of chapter 1. Okay, and there's a theme, Eich naflu giborim, how have the mighty fallen? Okay, and he realizes that now I have to be mighty to take their place. Mm-hmm. Right, and it's crucial that I secure the safety of these people. Now, the first thing that you expect from your government, would you agree? You expect some waterworks. You expect them to pave roads, maybe a transportation system. What do you expect from your government? Wouldn't you say that none of it matters if they don't keep you safe? Right? The first thing you expect from the people you're willing to give up some freedoms, right? Even in this very land of the free, we still give up some freedoms. We allow our government to restrict us in certain ways, right? So the very first thing you expect from your king, you'd rather have a king who would keep you safer. Right? So there might be different opinions within the nation of how to best do that, but this is a monarchy. This is not really a democracy here. But the Torah sets itself up in Parshas Shoftim in a way that the king does have to appeal to the better senses of the people. So the first thing that appears in chapter 2, okay, after Avner, this is now just a review for what to expect for next week. Avner is going to appoint Ishbosheth as king. I gave you three reasons earlier today why he would do such a thing. And what emerges very early on in this book is some kind of a competition. We'll have to look further to see what exactly the competition entailed. Some kind of competition to determine which side, the Binyamin side led by Ishbosheth and Avner, or the David side, right, led by David and Yoav, to see which side is better capable of securing the people. And this competition took a form of some kind of a almost like, I don't know, a capture the flag kind of game or something. You have to see what exactly it was. It involved chasing after some people and then capturing them, and right? Okay. It was a competition of 12 against 12, but somehow led to the deaths of almost 400 people. How could 400 people die in a competition of 12 against 12? Well, there were spectators. Think of a rowdy soccer match, okay? Okay, so we'll see what emerges from this spectacle, and Mirz Hashem will start with that next week as we move to chapter 2. Okay, it would help if you would just review the chapter about how Avner appoints Ishbosheth, and what led, and that's the first thing that we deal with is the question of security. There's also a question of morality which will follow, because you also expect your leaders, especially a king of Israel, to be morally upright. Okay, so that's going to be a question that comes up as well. Okay, everybody. I wish everybody to have a great day. All right, we will have the Minchas Chinuch Shir in about 10 minutes or so. Okay, everybody.
Thank you, Rabbi. Have a great week.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Rabbi Kol Tov.
Yes, God. Hello, everybody.
Nagesund. Nagesund, Deborah, Leon, Paul. Have a Daniel. Be well. Isabel, Laura, Leah, Maury, Sarah, yes, you, Robert. Call to everybody. Have a great week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.